Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, July 12th, 2018. This is the PW Torch Livecast post-impact show here on a Thursday night. I'm Mike McMahon, joined this week by PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, who's filling in for Andrew Socek. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. I know I have big shoes to fill, and I hope to come through in a big way tonight.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. This is going to be fun. I know I've been your guest on Wrestling Night in America a few times, and even back in the old moonlighting days. But it'll be fun to sit here and talk Impact for the next hour or so.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And it's a good time, too, because we're coming up on Slammiversary. So Impact is a very focused show with that pay-per-view just about 10 days away.
Yeah, what did you think of this show tonight? I mean, this was another one 2 weeks in a row where I thought they've put together a pretty good show, if you look at it kind of through the lens of they're pushing the pay-per-view. The whole idea of these last couple of shows before the pay-per-view is to push the pay-per-view. And while I thought the main event tonight was really good, there wasn't a whole lot of in-ring action necessarily on this show, but a lot of the focus was building towards the pay-per-view, and that's something that they've been pretty focused on, and I think have done a pretty good job with the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I thought it was a good show in that regard. I thought it was a good show overall. You had Cliffhanger with Sue Young and Madison Rayne there toward the end. You had the interaction with Austin Aries and D'Angelo Williams, which was really well done and certainly plants the seed for Williams to do something in the future in-ring with Impact Wrestling. So those were the two big standouts in my mind as far as prepping for Slammiversary. Then, of course, you had the main event, which was just off the charts as far as athleticism and crazy moves. And I'm glad they made it a tornado tag match.
Oh yeah.
So that it wasn't a regular tag match that would, you know, devolve into this, under the guise of rules in a real tag match. So it was best to get that out of the way and just make it a tornado tag from the beginning. And, you know, the first segment was the reintroduction in the ring of Hernandez and Homicide of the original LAX now being managed by Kingston. So that's a storyline that I'm really intrigued by as well. A lot of positives coming out of the show.
I like the fact, too, that they kept LAX, the new LAX, Conan, Ortiz, and Santana, they kept them off this show. The show ended last week with the original LAX and King just completely obliterating those guys. I'm sure they'll make a response next week before the match at Slammiversary a week from Sunday, but I like that they were patient enough to keep Ortiz, Santana, and Conan off the show tonight. And that's one of the things that I've noticed, especially over the last month. They haven't been shy about being patient with some things, and I think that that's a good sign. It's also something that they could probably get away with more than, say, WWE, because they've got 2 hours to fill every week and not 5 hours to fill every week. So they have a little more leeway in terms of being able to be patient, but they've done a pretty good job of being patient with how they've paid off some of their storylines.
Sure, and I agree. It was a good idea to, you know, it allows Hernandez, Homicide, and Kingston to kind of stand on their own at first with them being grouped together now. And, like you said, Conan's group will, I'm sure, get an opportunity to do the same. And it's all about building to that eventual payoff, which would be the match between the two teams. You don't need to intermingle them every week. You know, keep them separate. Let them show their own personalities. Let the fans see the difference in the two groups so that they're not always commingling and kind of blurring that line. I think it's important to get across both squads' personalities and really set them up as different groups before you really get into the big match that will settle the score.
We've already got some callers lined up, and we're going to get to phone calls in just a couple of minutes at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number 1 when you are on hold. That's going to let us know that you want to get on the air. Greg, the other thing that I thought has been interesting in the way they've built the Slammiversary is with the main event. And they've built it – the hype for the main event between Moose and Austin Aries feels very similar to the way that UFC builds their big fights. They're not in the ring every week. You know, Moose and Austin Aries have barely been in the ring at all. It's been a lot of video packages. It's been a lot of interviews. And that's kind of the – I mean, MMA – that's how they build their fights. That's how they have to build their fight, or how they have to build their big fights. Like Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier weren't going to fight someone lower on the card a week before they fought for the heavyweight title last Saturday. That's not how it works. So they have to rely on press conferences and altercations at weigh-ins and other ways to kind of get that heat across in their fights. Impact seems to be doing something very similar here. They're keeping Moose and Austin Aries, for the most part, off the show. Not completely. Like, Aries was in a segment with D'Angelo Williams tonight. Moose has been interviewed, and there's been video packages. They've kind of told the Moose story, which has been good. What have you thought of the way that they've promoted this main event so far? Because to me, it's been very different from the way they've promoted any main event in as long as I can remember. And it's even different than the way WWE is builds a lot of their main events, and that they're kind of taking the less is more approach with this, with these two.
And isn't that what we always want WWE to do? You know, when they do video packages, they do them so well. When they do preview videos, they are fantastic, and they don't do that often enough. Instead, because they have so much time to fill, we get Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley thrown out for 3 weeks in a row in talking segments that go nowhere and are terrible because the scripting is terrible and, you know, talking is not either guy's real strong suit, I wouldn't say. So I like that Impact has gone the direction of the video packages, doing that to hype up the match. Look, talking, I don't think, is Moose's strong suit. So to have them do WWE style, where you throw these guys out there every week on TV for a 10-minute, 15-minute in-ring talking segment, I don't think that's going to help Moose. Certainly help Aries, because that's something he's very adept at. But, you know, Moose is the challenger. There are people like me who don't necessarily buy Moose in this position, at least in the long term, of being a title challenger or even a top champion in the brand. So I thought bringing D'Angelo Williams in was a nice touch. He has history there, having wrestled there at Slammiversary last year. He's got a connection with Moose. They both play in the NFL. And there's a lot of goodwill built up with D'Angelo Williams through the fans based on his performance last year at Slammiversary. So I thought using him as a conduit this week to hyping Moose versus Austin Aries at Slammiversary was a nice touch. And the other thing is, Moose's training video that they showed tonight, I thought that was highlighting a strength of Moose. Again, his strength is not getting in the ring and talking at you as a viewer. His strength is his unique combination of size, speed, and power. And I think those training videos went a long way to showing that. So it's, you know, I'm reminded of the Paul Heyman mantra of highlighting people's strengths and masking their weaknesses. And I think to a certain extent, Impact is doing that with Moose in the build up to his title match at Slammiversary.
It also, and we'll see what happens in 10 days, but it also feels to me like they're really pushing towards him winning this match, because a lot of the buildup has been telling Moose's story. They ran that video package, it was either 2 or 3 weeks ago, where they literally, that's what they did. They told his story. I mean, why he went into wrestling, he talked about his background in football. I mean, this really seems like they're building up this being a culminating moment for Moose. And also, with the exception of some video packages, we've seen Austin Aries cut backstage interviews. We saw Austin Aries in the ring tonight. It feels like they're being much more conscious about keeping Moose off television than Aries. I don't know if that's done on purpose, if that's a signal that, hey, maybe this is trying to make Moose feel more important when he's in the ring at Slammiversary. That if he hasn't been on the show in a month, or especially in the ring for a month, and now all of a sudden you get to Slammiversary and he's standing in the ring, it could make that feel like a bigger moment. But I think it will, and I think the fact that they're building this more slowly and they're keeping them away from each other too. They haven't touched each other, which is important. I mean, yeah, they've cut promos and they've interacted with one another through video packages, but they haven't touched, and that's something that we don't get a lot of nowadays. A lot of times matches are built because there's a brawl, or even if they're not built because of that, at some point in the build to a big main event, two guys are going to touch, whether in a tag team match, whether they're going to fight in the ring during an interview, whether they're going to fight each other backstage, something's going to happen. And I'd be very surprised. I mean, look, maybe there's still 1 week left. I'd be very surprised if they touch each other at all on the show next week. I think we're probably going to get to Slammiversary and without Moose and Aries necessarily interacting with each other much at all.
And I really agree with what you said about the buildup feeling like it's leading to Moose getting the victory at Slammiversary. And the one thing going for Moose is he feels like an Impact wrestler. And I've talked about this on Wrestling Night in America before when I've talked about Impact, is you have so many guys going in and out. You have so many guys making Impact a stopover. You have guys like Austin Aries who, yeah, they're an Impact and they're on TV every week in some form, but they're also in ROH. They're also in MLW. They're splitting their time in a lot of other very visible organizations where, you know, they don't necessarily feel like an Impact. I don't want to say homegrown guy because Moose started out in ROH, but you know, he's a guy you associate with the Impact Wrestling brand. I don't know if Austin Aries is a guy like that. So Moose will give the hardcore Impact Wrestling fans who may watch Impact and very little else in the wrestling world, he'll give them the feeling that he's their champion. You know, he's not a belt collector like Austin Aries, where he's going to go to other promotions and collect belts. He's going to represent Impact Wrestling and Impact Wrestling fans. And I think that's important to have. You know, it's great that you can have these guys come in from AAA, from the Japanese promotions, from, you know, House of Hardcore and Lucha Underground. And it's great that you can share these wrestlers and this talent. You know, it's a great era we're in, certainly. But I think there is also something to be said from a fan's point of view, feeling like these wrestlers are that's their company. That's their home company, and that's somebody you can root for. And you know they're going to be there each and every week, and you know that, you know, it's not going to be like Cody Rhodes where they're there for a few months and then they go on to other things or anything of that nature. So I think that's something that positive that Moose has going for him at this time as well.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We hinted at it earlier, the main event tonight between OVE, and they faced off against Rich Swann, Pentagon, and Phoenix. Tornado tag, it was chaotic. There was, like you said, there were bodies everywhere at various points in the match. But I thought that this was one of the better, not only one of the better main events that Impact has had, probably in the Anthem era, it's probably been one of the better matches they've had since Anthem took over the company at the beginning of the year. This is one of the few times, and I don't remember saying this a lot, but I would say to people that are listening to this, whether it's live or whether it's Friday or Saturday over the weekend, whenever, if you didn't watch Impact this week, this would be a match that I would say you should go out of your way to see. And there hasn't been many of those. And I don't know that they necessarily have the roster that there's going to be many of those, but I was really impressed with this main event. What were your thoughts on the main event and just the whole buildup between Sami Callihan and Pentagon going into their match at Slammiversary?
Well, Don Callis called it perhaps the best tag team match he's ever seen. And, you know, he's been known to use hyperbole, certainly on commentary, but that's saying something for somebody like Don Callis to say that. So it was really good. It was at times a little more choreographed looking or feeling than I would prefer. Of course, your mileage may vary in that aspect. But as far as Sami Callihan and Pentagon Jr., I really wish they had gotten more time to build up this match, because I like the direction it's going. I like the clash of these two personalities, and it's hard to believe WWE tried to saddle Callahan with some sort of a hacker type gimmick in NXT the way he's gone off the deep end and done it so well in Impact. So I wish that they had a longer build to Slammiversary, to be honest with you. I understand that the Eddie Edwards and Sami Callihan feud sort of took off, and they were kind of building and building and building onto that. And, that took up a lot of time. I like the clash of personalities between Callihan and Pentagon. It'll be interesting to see what they do next week in the final hype for that match at Slammiversary. And it's one of the matches I'm most looking forward to at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I thought it was a little odd in the way that they transitioned from Callahan and Eddie Edwards to Callahan and Pentagon. That felt a little quick. It felt a little rushed. The transition for Eddie Edwards into his match with Tommy Dreamer just obviously feels a lot more natural, because there was yep. interplay between Dreamer and Edwards during that Callahan-Edwards feud. But still, I mean, I thought that even though a couple of weeks ago they really kind of rushed the whole match together, I think at one point Andrew and I have talked about this. I think it was 3 weeks back, Don Callis out of nowhere started talking about how much Sami Callihan loves his hair, which we had never heard before. And I think it telegraphed a little too much the hair versus mask match that they were going to do at the pay-per-view. This is still, it's kind of another step for Callihan, where over the course of this year, he's really come into his own. And I don't know that it'd be tough for me, at least in the U.S., it would be tough for me to come up with a heel that has more heat than Sami Callihan right now. And it's tough to judge with the Impact crowd, especially when they're in Orlando, because it's not really a wrestling crowd. But I think especially the last 2 weeks where they've been in Windsor, granted it's a smaller crowd, but it's still a crowd that's giving you wrestling type reaction because it is a wrestling crowd. I think you're really seeing that Callihan is over as a heel. And that's probably harder than getting over as a babyface nowadays, because it can be hard to make people. I think people often say that, oh, it's easier to be a heel because it's easy to make people hate you. Not really in 2018, because a lot of things that heels are going to do, people think are cool. And some heels are even playing the crowd. It becomes hard to be a real heel. And I think Callahan's doing a really good job of being a heel. You know, he's not trying to get cheered and he's not kind of dumbing it down in a way where he's making fun of the crowd to make sure that they boo him or anything like that. He's just being a heel, and it's working really well.
I think that's been a real revelation for Impact dating back. I think he really started coming into his own during the Eddie Edwards feud way back at the beginning of the act, when he hit Eddie with a baseball bat. And there were a couple different directions that he could have gone with that, and he ended up really owning it on social media, whether you agree or disagree with how he handled that on social media. That sort of led to an explosion for that character, and it carried over on television, and he did a fantastic job, I thought, with the Eddie Edwards feud. And he's, like I said, the Pentagon is almost like the babyface version of Sami Callihan, where Pentagon just wants to hurt you and he wants to break you, but he's a babyface in doing it. And, you know, zero fear type attitude that he brings, and Sami Callahan's just kind of the heel side of that. And both guys are so intense, and I think that's why I would have liked to have seen a little more build, a little more time to allow this to build, because I think you could have really seen the stages of a building to getting really, really hot, as opposed to, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago and boom, it has to start out really hot just because it's the nature of the build, and you only have 3 weeks till Slammiversary. So yeah, Callahan is I think you could make the argument that he's been the MVP of Impact over the last 6 months, and if not, certainly he's in the conversation.
I had something that I bounced before we go to the break. I had something I bounced off of Andrew a couple of weeks ago. And I said, you know, if somebody were to ask me right now, make one completely outrageous prediction for Impact this year that could come true, like just something that's completely off the wall, but you could actually see happening. I want to know if you think this is too far off the wall, because Andrew didn't think it would happen. And I certainly see why, because it is a little off the wall, but I look at how they've built Callahan and some of the things that they've said about him and some of the other things that other people have said about him. And I almost wonder if they're angling, and maybe they're just trying to lay the groundwork in case they can convince him to do it. But it almost kind of feels like they're laying the groundwork for a Chris Jericho match at some point. I said to Andrew, you know, my big off-the-wall prediction would be, what if Sami Callihan wrestled Chris Jericho at Bound for Glory? And the reason I bring it up is I know, obviously, Jericho's close with Don Callis, and Sami Callihan is going to be on the Jericho cruise, and they've, on Don Callis's, on the Killing the Town podcast, have kind of made a little bit of an angle about that, about how they don't trust Callihan on the boat, and what's he going to do, and he's a madman, and if he's on the boat, you know, bad things could happen, and it feels to me like they're setting up something that if they can convince Jericho to do it, they run some type of angle on the boat and it sets up a Callihan Jericho match. I'm not sure that Jericho would do it. You know, I know he's wrestled for New Japan for a while. He said he would never wrestle anywhere other than WWE, and he's wrestled for New Japan. And I think he can convince himself to do that because he says he's not hurting WWE if he's wrestling out of the country. I think I've heard him even. I don't know if it was a direct quote or if I've read reports where that's kind of been his mindset. If he's wrestling in Japan, he's not necessarily hurting WWE domestically. So I don't know that he would ever agree to it, but it does kind of feel like Impact may be trying to lay the groundwork for something like that. And the other thing that made me bring it up was I think it was after Callihan was on Jericho's podcast a few months ago. It was either on Twitter or maybe he said it on the air on the podcast. I don't exactly remember, but Jericho was really heavy in his praise of Sami Callihan about how well he thought he was doing as a heel and how he was impressed with his work on Impact in the feud with Eddie Edwards. So it seems like there's a lot of things aligning here where you've got a guy in Jericho who's praising Callihan more so than he praises other guests who have been on his show. You've got a relationship between Jericho and one of the guys who's running the company. Callihan is going to be involved, it seems, on that Jericho cruise. I mean, there's a lot of things that are kind of lining up where I know it's off the wall, and I wouldn't even put the probability as likely, but I kind of feel like they're setting up for something like that. And if they're going to do it, Bound for Glory would obviously be the show to do it at. Andrew, like I said, Andrew Socek didn't think that there was a strong possibility of it happening. Do you think it's a too off-the-wall prediction that we could see something like that? Do you think Jericho would ever be on board, even in a one-off match, to do something with Impact?
It would take a change of heart from Jericho, because I think the latest that he said is he didn't want to wrestle for any company in America unless it's WWE. And I think that's why he didn't do the New Japan G1 special in San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, someone did bring
to do that. You know, he would.
Someone, I think one of the callers after I brought it up said, "Well, they'll do it in Canada. Does that count?"
Yeah, Canada may still be WWE's market in Jericho's mind.
I would assume so. Yeah.
The same thing with All In. Yeah, the same thing with All In. You know, if Jericho had a different mindset, I think he would be a possibility for All In. But he's shown that he's not willing to take that step and to cross into enemy territory in America, or in North America, I guess I should say, to rival WWE. We know that when it comes to wrestling, it's hard to take Chris Jericho at his word, because he'll put the stuff out there and then just do the opposite just to screw with the fan base and just to be a surprise, I think. But this one seems to have evidence to back up that he's not really interested in doing anything. You know, Don Callis could talk him into it. He could really, you know, like you said, he's effusive in his praise for Sami Callihan. He could decide that this is a great opportunity to really elevate this young guy, Callihan, make something out of him. But again, it would take a 180 degrees from Chris Jericho to do that.
I wonder too, and Andrew and I have talked about this, you know, does WWE even view Impact as competition? Should they? I think they're smart to view New Japan as much bigger competition than Impact. Because just you look at Impact's numbers, they're getting a tenth of the viewership that WWE is. They're not on a major cable network anymore. WWE is no longer in the pay-per-view business really at all. So, you know, you wonder, let's say this is something he wanted to do. If Jericho went to Vince McMahon and said, "Hey, I want to do this. I'm a fan of this guy. I want to work with him." Does WWE even look at it and go, is it even competition at this point? Because it seems like they're promoting the same type of product, but it feels like they're on different planets right now.
I think they're competition insofar as for talent, and that's a big thing, and obviously WWE's got the money to throw around to where if they wanted somebody from Impact when their contract expires, they could certainly toss enough money at them to convince them. But Impact is still on national TV, so WWE is going to view them as competition, even though it is pop TV, and even though it is not a, as has been reported, not a entirely favorable deal to Impact Wrestling. I still think that WWE wants to make sure it stays that way, and that Impact doesn't get a buzz around it the next time their contract is due, and all of a sudden they've got leverage and they can go to some of these other companies and maybe even streaming platforms and say, hey, we've got this product here. How much are you willing to pay for it? So in both of those regards, I think WWE probably views them as competition, right? That it's certainly not competition in the same way that WCW was competition, where it was really neck and neck there for a while. But we've seen with the ROH deal at Madison Square Garden the smallest of companies can be competition to WWE if they feel threatened. And I think WWE would, you know, it would be funny if Chris Jericho went to Vince McMahon and asked permission, because the big thing in Jericho's books has been, his mantra has been, you know, asking for forgiveness is easier than asking for permission.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He may just think, hey, if I've got this idea in my head about wrestling for Impact, you know, let me do it first and then go to Vince and say, hey, I didn't know it was a big deal, you know, and of course they take him back. So, I still think it would be very unlikely.
All right, well, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll get the phone calls at 515-605-9345. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast here on a Thursday.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pants, and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off. Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
All right, we're back here on the PW Torch Livecast. It is a Thursday night, so we're talking Impact Wrestling. I'm Mike McMahon with Greg Parks, who's filling in for Andrew Socek this week. Let's get to the calls. Let's go first to Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, you're up first in the Livecast.
First question I have for you is on Sami Callihan. Do you think Don Callis is the one writing for his character? Because I noticed on commentary, he said he's like a David Crush-like character. I found that odd since, obviously, Don Callis played that character in WWE very well about 20-some years ago.
Yeah, I'm sure that Callihan and Callis have talked. I'm sure Callis has some influence on that too. I mean, I know the creative team is pretty small. I think it's just Scott D'Amore, Sanjay Dutt, and Don Callis. I don't think there's anybody else really involved. So I would imagine that he's heavily involved in helping shape that character. I also think that Callahan's probably heavily involved and has a lot of input in it as well. Impact has been so open and honest about trying to let talent go work in other places and let talent control their own characters when they go to other companies. I would imagine that they, especially with someone like Callihan, would give him the leeway to have a lot of input in how that character comes across and how it's portrayed. Greg, what do you think? Do you think that Don Callis is working especially close with Sami Callihan and how they've developed that character?
You know, it's possible. I thought it was a little odd that Callis made the comparison to Jim Jones and to David Koresh when it comes to Sami Callihan, because I don't know if I see that connection with that character right now. You know, sure, he's got the Crist brothers that he teams with, but I don't see them as being under his spell or anything like that. I don't feel like the booking has been that way. So, Callis, it could just have been kind of an off-the-cuff remark that he made that we're not supposed to think too deeply about, but it could be hinting to something in the future where he becomes more like those characters and Callis is privy to creative, so he may be laying the groundwork for it, kind of like you mentioned earlier with the line about, you know, Sammy really valuing his hair, and there really wasn't anything to that at the time. You know, I think Don may work closely with the real top acts. I could see that happening, and I would say Callahan qualifies as a top act in Impact right now.
Yeah, second question for you is on Angela Williams. You picture him maybe winning the title at Bound for Glory, then having Moose turn heel because he would end up being jealous of his friend winning the title in like a short amount of time, because it seemed like they were sort of like planting seeds for an Aries Williams match down the line.
I don't know that they'd put the title on Williams. I think that they're going to try to use him more. It went, obviously, you know, Greg brought it up. It went really well at Slammiversary last year. I think people were impressed with his work. He's no longer in football. He didn't play last year, and I doubt he'd play this year. I mean, once you take a year off, especially at his age, the likelihood of you going back into the NFL is pretty small. So if he's interested in getting into wrestling, and he had a good showing with limited training in his first run, or his first dive into it last year, I could see him being more involved. I don't know that they'd put the title on him. I think that would have to be well down the line and well into the future, not just a Bound for Glory. But I could see them doing something with Aries and D'Angelo Williams without the title. Let's say you get to Slammiversary a week from Sunday, and D'Angelo Williams is somehow involved in the finish, and Moose wins the championship. Now Aries and Williams have a match at some point at Bound for Glory, more than likely, like you said. I could see something like that happening, but I don't think that he would be anywhere near the title unless he goes full-time into pro wrestling, goes full-time with Impact Wrestling, and is probably with them for, you know, a couple of years, I would say, before they could get him built up to the point where he would feel serious as a title contender. Greg, do you think that D'Angelo Williams will eventually wrestle another match with Impact?
It certainly seems that way, and I think your theory is more on point, Mike, where you probably do a D'Angelo Williams Austin Aries match at Bound for Glory. You have Moose win at Slammiversary. Moose defends the title against an unnamed heel opponent at Bound for Glory. That seems to be the more likely scenario right now to me than D'Angelo Williams winning the title. There was a time in Impact Wrestling's history where they would, without a doubt, put the title on D'Angelo Williams immediately.
Yeah. It would have happened last year.
Publicity. Yeah, exactly. Just to get that mainstream publicity from that. I think D'Angelo will wrestle again, but then you have to ask yourself, is he going to go full time? And that's an Impact. Maybe that's not as big of a deal, especially if you're not doing indies, if you're not supplementing yourself with, you know, wrestling here and there every other weekend, if you're just doing Impact tapings and pay-per-views. For a guy like D'Angelo Williams, that's probably a manageable post-football career. But that's even a stretch to say that he goes full-time in Impact. I think if he does wrestle again, it will be just here or there.
Another question I have for you is, recently, the announcers put up the fact that Brian Cage and Eli Drake are in the movies. Actually, one of them's the one that Brian Cage is in is a He-Man short that's about 38 minutes long, and one Eli Drake's in is called the Gold Rush Boogie. Can you picture any of these movies or shorts being featured on Talk TV to sort of cross-promote the product?
I would doubt it, only because, you know, like Greg said earlier, the relationship with Pop TV and Impact, it's not like they're partners really in any way, shape, or form. Although you wouldn't know that. I've been critical of Impact for the amount of promotion they put into the other Pop TV shows when it seems like that's a one-way street. I'm not quite sure how much promotion Pop gives Impact. But yeah, I wouldn't think that anything like that would hit Pop's airwaves. Greg, what do you think there?
Yeah, I agree. I'm disappointed in, you know, and I profess that I don't watch Pop TV other than Impact Wrestling, but I don't get the sense that that's a very highly promoted show on the network, whereas I know when and where Swedish Dicks is going to be on. And, you know, I know, you know, when and where some of the other shows and even the repeats, like when they were pushing ER for a while there,
yeah,
really hard after Impact, you know. And that was just repeats of a show that's been off the air for 10, 15 years. So it is kind of disappointing that that Impact does feel like it's just kind of renting space on Pop TV. Not that I think a lot of promotion would help, because I don't think these other shows on Pop TV probably pull in any kind of numbers that would be beneficial to Impact if they were cross-promoted.
Yeah.
But it's the sad fact of being on a network that just is so under the radar like Pop TV is.
And it's also the crossover in demographic, I don't think, is there. Like, I know I've said this on the show before. Is it going to help Impact Wrestling if they're getting promoted on, you know, Days of Our Lives reruns on Pop TV? Probably not, because I don't think there's a big crossover in demographic. I don't know this for sure. I would imagine that Impact is the most viewed show on the network. Although, you know what, the Big Brother After Dark show that they air at night sometimes, I think I've read, does pretty good numbers, just because that show is so popular on the CBS network. But I would imagine that Pop, if it's not their most highly rated show, it certainly has to be one of them in terms of just total viewership.
I think we need to start a petition to get Eli Drake to guest star on Schitt's Creek.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, but something like that would work. I mean, because Schitt's Creek has developed a little bit of a buzz. Like, that has a little bit of a cult following to it, and I think something like that could work. And at least it would feel a little more like it's a two-way street rather than Impact just promoting any right. show that Pop wants him to promote. The worst one, the most egregious one was. I'm trying to think of the name. The two just muscled up guys. It was like a reality show that was on for about a second and a half. The Swole Mates, oh, God, or the yeah. Swole Bros or whatever they were. And they had them sitting.
They were on Impact.
Oh, they were. Yeah, they were in the ring. I think they did something where, like, they yeah. attacked Eli Drake and not Chris Masters. I'm drawing a blank on not Chris. He wasn't known as Chris Masters. Not Chris Masters on Impact. It was Chris Adonis. But they did something where, like, they attacked those guys in the ring. And I remember going on the air that the night that happened, just be like, what are they doing? Like, what is the point? What's the purpose of helping promote a show that no one's going to care or watch about? And, I remember saying, I hope they got paid for it. Like, or maybe they got to air the show for free that week or whatever. But I hope they got paid for it, because I don't understand why they would go out of their way to promote stuff like that. But they do, and they continue to. So anything else, Ryan?
Final question for you is, are you potentially seeing a trend in wrestling where they do TV tapings at a college campus just to get some different eyeballs on a product? Say, like, these college towns don't really have wrestling come there too often. I noticed, you know, that they've been filming at these college campuses. So I think it could maybe bring some new fresh fans into seeing professional wrestling if done correctly.
I think the last sentence there was the key. If done correctly, if you think you could draw a crowd. I mean, back WWE and WCW used to run college campuses a lot in the late 90s. You know, you watch some Raws and Nitros from 97 to 99, and they were on college campuses a lot. But it was also, they were targeting an older demographic, and college kids were I think more into the show. Whereas at least from a WWE perspective, they're targeting a younger audience now. But with a show like Impact, I think it could work. Impact, Ring of Honor, companies that are going after an older demographic, I think you could get onto some of the smaller college campuses. You're going to have a younger crowd there that should be a little more energetic. And I think that would work. Greg, what do you think of that strategy? Because that is something that Impact, I don't know if they're necessarily going to go after just Canadian universities, but they're trying to get, it feels like, in front of obviously a more wrestling-based crowd. I know they taped this last set of tapings on a college campus. They're going to remain in Canada for the pay-per-view and the next set of tapings. But the overall energy of the show, I think, has drastically improved since they've gotten out of Orlando the last couple of weeks. Is that a strategy you think they should try to continue moving forward?
Yeah, I like that idea. And, you know, WWE even now will tape Raw and SmackDown at college campuses, of course, the big college campuses. But I also think you're right that WWE specifically is more geared toward a family audience. So college campuses, if you're trying to draw that college age demographic, I think it would be tougher in this era to do that. With Impact, I mean, the smaller colleges that have the smaller arenas or the smaller gymnasiums, I guess, would be probably something that you would want to look at. I can't imagine the cost being terribly high, especially over the summer when you don't really have a lot of foot traffic usually at a lot of these colleges. I think it would be harder to do while school's in session because there's always something going on at the gyms in college. So, you know, with Impact Wrestling's taping schedule, that might mean only one or two set of tapings over the summer. But yeah, I think that's a viable option. And for Impact, it's a lot better idea than trying to go to more expensive, bigger arenas where, you know, you're going to draw 1,000 or 2,000 in a 10,000 or 15,000 seat building, and that's not going to look good. And I think it's also a better idea than going back to Orlando and taping in front of the kind of crowds that they've been getting. But it's all about price. I mean, that's going to be the bottom line. If they can get into these college campuses for cheap, then I think it's a great idea. But the bottom line for Impact is the bottom line financially right now. And I think every decision they're making has an extra eye toward that.
All right, Ryan. Hey, we appreciate the call.
You know, I think,
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Impact did run Indiana University 5 years ago, and they did about 4,000 people, but Hulk Hogan was on the card.
Yeah,
the company was in a little bit of a different spot at that point in time. I mean, you saw the flashback moment they aired tonight from Slammiversary. I think it was in 2013. They were at a Gannis Arena on the campus of Boston University, ironically enough. And there was probably – I was actually at that show. I think there was probably 5,000 or 6,000 people in the building that night. If they went back to that building today, the crowd I don't think would be anywhere near that size. So it's kind of a different point in time, but it's a strategy that I think could work if they try to go back to it, at least on a smaller setting like what they did in Windsor.
And now that you mention it, I was at an Impact pay-per-view several years ago now. It was on the campus of the University of Miami. So
yeah,
that's been something that Impact has done in the past. And, you know, I like that idea.
All right, Ryan. Hey, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. You can join us as well at 515-605-9345. We're going to sneak in another break. And when we come back, more of your phone calls here on the PW Torch Livecast.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
All right, back here on the PW Torch livecast here on Thursday, July 12th, 2018. Greg Parks is joining me this week. And Greg, what do you have coming up this week on Wrestling Night in America, Sunday night?
Well, of course, it is a WWE pay-per-view weekend.
Oh, that's
so
right. It is, isn't it?
We'll all happily and merrily sit down and watch Extreme Rules. And then once Extreme Rules goes off the air, we will go on the air with Wrestling Night in America Sunday night on PWTorchLivecast.com. We'll be taking your phone calls at the same number you can call in here and talking Extreme Rules and what your thoughts are, where things stand, where things are going forward. And every other weekend that there's not a pay-per-view, we're on at 8 p.m. Eastern. So about 90 minutes, and you can tune in and listen to us. And Extreme Rules is this weekend, and then Mike, you and Andrew are going to take over for Slammiversary weekend.
That's right. Pay-per-views on back-to-back weekends in different – this doesn't happen very often. Especially
not
with,
anymore. No.
Yeah, so especially with Impact's limited. I mean, well, we're up to three now. I mean, they were down to two for a while, but they're back up to three, and maybe more in the future. All right, let's get back to the phone calls, and let's head next to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Greg doing this week?
Pretty good, I think.
We're doing excellent.
Sounds like you're doing better than you are most weeks when we begin this segment, Mike. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I think the show's been pretty good the last couple of weeks. I haven't had many things that have driven me crazy. So this is a pleasant change.
I'm glad to say that I too did not need lithium pills after this show. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So, as usual, I have an interesting stack of questions ready to go. Question number one for you and Greg is in regards to the Knockouts division, and more specifically, Tessa Blanchard. Now that Tessa Blanchard has reportedly signed a 2-year contract with Impact Wrestling as of a few days ago, which of the following do you see happening? Madison Rayne going over Sue Young at Slammiversary, and then transitioning the Knockouts title off of Madison Rayne at Bound for Glory, or instead of having the traditional babyface capture the Knockouts title from the evil Sue Young at Slammiversary, have Sue Young continue to hold the title potentially until Bound for Glory, and have Tessa Blanchard go over on her and continue the streak of having heels with the Knockouts title until another babyface is deemed ready to go.
If it were up to me, I'd like to see them do the second option, only because I haven't been very high on the Madison Rayne return. I don't get it. I don't feel like she was a big enough star at the time for this big return to feel like it's all that important. If she does win the title at Slammiversary, I hope it's in a transitionary role, and I hope that she transitions the belt pretty quickly to Tessa Blanchard. They've built up Tessa a little more slowly than they have some of the other newer talent that have come in. It almost felt like they kind of stuttered a little bit before they really started to push the pedal on her push. They have in recent weeks, for sure. Greg, what do you think there? Do you think that they will first of all, do you think that they'll give Tessa Blanchard the title quickly? Do you think they'll hold off before they give her a run with the Knockouts title? And when they do you think it will be over someone like Sue Young, or do you think that they will put the belt on Madison Rayne and then have Tessa maybe take it off of Madison at some point?
I wouldn't be surprised if Madison won at Slammiversary, the way she's been pushed. And I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Mike. I'm not really sure about this whole Madison Rayne push. She did a nice job with the acting in tonight's vignettes with the Sue Young stuff, and that's not always easy to do, especially in wrestling. So she's got a little momentum now in my eyes, but I think Tessa Blanchard is such a strong heel presence. I think you would want her to go over a babyface for the title. And Tessa Blanchard versus Sue Young, I think they're both really strong heels, and I don't see Impact matching them up against each other at Bound for Glory. So I think the more likely scenario is Madison wins at Slammiversary and then loses to Tessa at Bound for Glory. I think Tessa, I think she could be the standard bearer for the division. I mean, I think she could be champion whenever she wins it for quite some time and really hold it. It's not a division, I don't think, right now that's strong in baby faces. Maybe that's part of the reason Madison was brought back and put in such a prominent position, especially with Allie kind of in this transition phase, I would say. And Kira Hogan, I think, has a lot of potential, but she's got some work to do in getting built up. We saw Shotzi Blackheart debut in Impact here tonight. I think Tessa is really the standout of the division right now. And now that she's got the security of the 2-year contract, I could really see them putting the title on her for the long term.
That makes sense. Question number 2 is in regards to Impact event strategy and planning philosophy. In light of the big news of the day that Ring of Honor is running their WrestleMania weekend event, Super Card of Honor, at Madison Square Garden on April 6th of next year, with Impact gaining critical buzz, despite the fact that most people would not view it as a smart decision, do you suppose that Impact Wrestling management will start beginning to try again the concept of running big television tapings and or pay-per-views in large arenas to give people the perception that they are still a big company, even though they've had a terrible history of not selling out or even coming close to filling a quarter of the large arenas that they visited under previous management regimes?
Yeah, that's the thing they're going to struggle with now, because they had more eyeballs on them at that point in time. We're going back 5 or 6 years ago at this point, and they had a hard time filling up some of those buildings. So if they tried to do it now, I think it would you would run the risk of really embarrassing yourself as a company if you were to run a 6,000 seat building and you get 500 people to show up. That would look bad. It would look beyond bad. So I think they're gonna stick with the smaller buildings that they've been running. I mean, even when they've gotten away from the Impact Zone over the course of this year, they were in Ottawa in a pretty small building, but they made it look good. The building they're in Windsor, taping Impact at this last set of tapings, again, it's a smaller building, but they've made it look good. I mean, I looked up some pictures online of what that gym looks like when it's in use for basketball and whatever else, and it looks like kind of looks like a high school gym. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like. But Impact, you wouldn't know that watching these shows the last couple of weeks. I think they've done a good job of making the arena, the building, look good on television. So I would imagine they're going to stick with the smaller buildings. I would love to see them get out more and just be in front of different fans, especially fans that are perhaps even paying to see the product. I think that's going to help. But yeah, I don't think they're going to go after anything big right away. Greg, what do you think there?
Well, Impact does have some positive buzz, but it's amongst such a small niche group of fans that we saw Impact ratings rise there for a few months, but now they're kind of back down to pretty low numbers the last several weeks. So that's not indicative of a really hot company. And this isn't Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan trying to recreate the Monday Night Wars. This is Don Callis, and he's being a lot more judicious, I think, with the decisions that are made in Impact, and it's going to be more of a slow build under him than I think it has been under a lot of different managements within Impact. So I don't think you're going to try to see him jump now to bigger arenas. Like you said, Mike, if those pictures get around on the internet, all of a sudden this company with a lot of positive buzz, all that's going to end. And people are going to think, wow, look at this. You know, and the trouble is, too, going forward, no matter where you run, is getting people to pay to watch Impact. For so many years, the Impact Zone tapings have been free in Orlando. They hardly ever run house shows. The pay-per-view numbers aren't – I don't think they're even released anymore. I mean, nobody reports on them as far as the numbers they do. It's only the hardcore fans. So the trouble is going to be getting wrestling fans to pay for Impact Wrestling, whether it's house shows, whether it's TV tapings, after so many years of not paying for it. And I think that's going to be where you're going to run into some resistance, at least at first, when you start going out and doing house shows, and when you start doing TV tapings at some other locations outside the Impact Zone.
Yeah, but stranger things have been known to happen within the wrestling business, so I still felt the need to ask that question.
Fair enough. Stranger things certainly have happened.
Absolutely.
And my final... sorry, Mike, did you have something you wanted to add before I moved on?
No, I was actually agreeing with you. The stranger things absolutely have happened.
And my final question is, why do you suppose Impact Management moved Ryan Cage from what we assumed was going to be a very prominent position in the heavyweight division down to the X division, possibly or not possibly in favor of Moose in terms of world title contention and possibly holding the world heavyweight title.
Yeah, I don't know that he necessarily moved down past anyone. I kind of look at it more of this is just a pit stop for Brian Cage. He's probably going to win the X Division Championship, I would imagine. And then I think it just feels like more of a pit stop on his journey for me. I still think that they have big things planned for him and will do big things with him over the course of the next year, more than likely probably even before the end of this calendar year. So I don't think that this was them moving him down as much as it's just them trying to build him as slowly and as appropriately as they can and not try to rush him too quickly so that it doesn't feel like he's being forced down the fans' throat. I think they're probably very cognizant of what's happening with a guy like Roman Reigns, who feels like he's being forced on the fans. And I don't know that, I mean, Cage has not gotten that type of reaction, but I think that Impact is being smart in realizing, hey, we don't want it to look like that's what we're trying to do with Brian Cage. So I think they're going to be a lot more methodical about the way that they build him up and the X Division, and what I assume is going to be an X Division championship win, is going to be kind of one of his many destinations en route to that ultimate destination of winning the world title. Greg, what do you think on how they've built Brian Cage and the change of direction of what it, maybe it wasn't a change of direction. Maybe this was a plan for Impact all along, but what feels like a little bit of a change in direction for him going after the X Division title at Slammiversary.
Well, the thing to understand about the X division vis-a-vis the heavyweight division in Impact Wrestling is it's not separated. It's not a separate entity like the cruiserweights are in WWE, where there's no crossover. Once you're a cruiserweight for life. In the X division, we've seen guys go from X division to heavyweight division back and forth. So this is not a death knell for the Impact career of Brian Cage, you know, where he's stuck in the X division forever. The thing to remember is Impact has 2 hours of TV every week. They have Moose and Austin Aries in the main event. You know, Cage could be in the heavyweight division doing some undercard feud with Eli Drake, or he could be showing off his strength and against a lighter opponent and showing off his athletic ability against an X division opponent in Matt Sydal. And Sydal checks both of those boxes for being an opponent of Brian Cage. So I kind of like the idea, now that I'm talking it out a little bit, I kind of like the idea of Cage making a stopover in the X division first. I think he's a world title guy all the way. I mean, I like him in that spot better than Moose over the long term. So, you know, I think that eventually he's going to be in that position where he's a world title contender or Impact Wrestling champion. But, you know, I certainly can't complain with a slow build here.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Okay. Well, Mike, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the questions I posed for this week, and hopefully Andrew will be back with us next week.
Sounds good, Colin. Thanks for the call. Yeah, Andrew will be back next week. He's I joked on Twitter that he's on assignment, but his assignment is simply some rest and relaxation because he's on vacation this week. So we will welcome Andrew back as we talk about the go-home show to Slammiversary next Thursday. But let's get back to the phone calls at 515-605-9345. Let's go next to Kenny in Tennessee. Kenny, you're up next on the livecast.
Hey, guys, it's great to be calling on the show again. It's kind of been a while since I've called on this particular show because I've had to make some changes in my lifestyle, kind of similar to Pat McNeil, but mine was more job-related. But I finally got a chance to sit down and watch a whole episode of Impact outside of DVRing, and I kind of agree with you. I did like the show, but I did have a couple of things I wanted to kind of address on, and it's kind of a little different from sort of the questions you've been getting lately. I do want to talk about the main event as far as just the psychology of how the match went. You know, to me, it was really interesting how physical the match really was. And in a way, it was just amazing how they were just kicking out of a lot of scenarios that I thought, man, you know, that was going to be the end of the match. Like, especially that spot with the, which Swan took, which was intercepted, and I thought for sure that that might have been the end. And it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just because I've been listening to a lot of Tony Schiavone, Bruce Pritchard, and Eric Bischoff podcasts. It just seemed like that they were just doing way too much, and it was a point where it just got to where, you know, the phrase not selling, to where, but by the end, you know, when Sami Callihan hit his finishing move, it was kind of like they were waiting for that one spot. And then you had all of these hard-hitting moves, and it was just kind of like, well, you were waiting and waiting and waiting. And I guess my question was, and considering how I know Don Callis is, you know, heavily influenced with New Japan, it did seem like it did rub off on it, but I thought it kind of was a little too much as far as just the hard-hitting, that maybe they just kind of maybe slowed down a bit. Do you agree with my perception that maybe it was the match was, while great, maybe had done a little bit less to kind of get to the point of Sami Callihan, you know, hitting his move, and then that would be the end of it, that maybe just doing a little too much?
Yeah, I think you're going to run into that with most companies nowadays. You know, I see both sides of it. You know, I think from Impact standpoint, if they're trying to generate a buzz and they're trying to emulate companies like New Japan, like you said, that's kind of a style that they have to try to emulate. That's what the matches are going to look like. They're going to look a lot like what they look like in the main event, because that has become, I hate using this term, but it's become the indie style, for lack of a better term. That's what a lot of Ring of Honor matches look like. It's what a lot of New Japan matches look like. There's a lot of action. And, yeah, there's a lot less selling, and moves are kicked out of it, might not necessarily be kicked out of all the time. I will say, from Impact standpoint, though, they don't do stuff like that all the time. And I think that's important, so that when you have a match like this tonight where a lot of stuff was kicked out of, and there was a lot of moves, and there was a lot of things that might have not necessarily been sold the way they would have been sold, you know, 20 years ago, they don't do it every single week. So it feels different on this show, and I think they can get away with it in moderation. And that's something that they got to be mindful of it. Like you said, I don't think you want to get into a point where you're not selling anything, because then there's no move that means anything if nothing's being sold. So I do think there's a balance that you've got to walk. And I think Impact overall has done a pretty good job of maintaining that balance, just because they don't do things like this all of the time. Even their X Division matches don't look the way that six-man tag looked all the time. They do it once in a while, but not all the time. Andrew, Greg, what are your feelings on Kenny's point here that, hey, you know, that match may have been exciting, but there wasn't necessarily the selling of the big moves in a match like that?
I got to say, I'm impressed that it took you an hour to call me Andrew. I give you credit for that, Mike.
I know. I figured it would have happened four or five times.
You know, well, when you're used to working with someone almost exclusively, yeah, that's bound to happen. I remember when I was doing, you know, post shows with James Caldwell all the time, and all of a sudden I was doing moonlighting, I called at least three guys James at different times because I was so used to working with him. You know, there's a certain level of keeping up with the Joneses that I think any company feels in this day and age, and there's probably pressure on Impact to do the same. I will say it's funny that Kenny brings up that specific spot in the match, because I felt the same way. I thought Rich Swann kicking out of that would have been ridiculous. But if you notice, he didn't kick out of that move. His two tag team partners broke up the pin, and I watched Swann, and he continued to sell that move for a few minutes afterwards. So, I thought that move, or a move like that, probably should have been the finish. But Swann didn't kick out. His partners broke up the pin, and he continued to sell it afterwards. So, in defense of that particular match tonight, I will say that. But it's just a matter of, you know, that's the style of this era of wrestling. And there are advantages and there are disadvantages. And I think Kenny brought up the disadvantages, and Mike, you brought up some of the advantages. And, you know, it's in a time when people's attention spans are a lot shorter because there are so many other choices. You want a more fast-paced, engaging style, and I think that match was indicative of that tonight. And I think it's a credit to the wrestlers. The wrestlers these days are a lot they're big on creativity and coming up with different stuff, coming up with different moves, different transitions, different ways to do things. And I don't think we should fault the wrestlers for that. I think it's great that they have that initiative, that they want to go out there and quote-unquote steal the show. Not saying that was the intent of this match, but we see matches like that where it is very creative, and you see higher-risk things, which we saw last week at the G1 have their disadvantages. But guys willing to push the envelope, and that's what's going to get them noticed.
Right, and I'm not faulting that at all. I'm just saying that, you know, it gets to that point where, you know, you're watching and watching, and then you're thinking to yourself, you know, is that supposed to be the finish, or is that supposed to be the finish? That's what kind of And again, I'm just trying to get used to the changing that we're seeing in pro wrestling. You know, it is a radical change. I agree to you there. And it's just something that, for me, that grew up watching things a certain way, when I see high spots like I saw with Rich Swann, I figured, my gosh, that has to be at the end of it for sure. And, you know, and in a lot of ways, it was kind of like that they were, it felt like coming off of the match on NXT the night before, that it just felt like it was almost mirroring it in a lot of ways. I thought that that and just what we've been seeing in New Japan and in Ring of Honor, it just seemed like they're all kind of coming together and all looking the same. And we are seeing that style more prevalent. And I would rather have a match like that than what we saw in the opening match with the, I guess you can say the original LAX, where it just like it turned into a 1980s WWF squash match. You know, I mean, I would much rather have what we had tonight.
And Kenny, I will say this in your defense is there is a certain point, I think, in a match where such big moves are hit and guys recover for them so quickly and kick out of pins. And I think there does come a point in the match for people where your eyes just kind of glaze over and you're like, you just kind of, it's almost too much where you just sit back and you're like, okay, like it's just move after move after move after move. And it's just too much. The trouble is that point is different for everybody. So it sounds like you reached that point somewhere in this match tonight where it was just the selling wasn't there, but they were hitting these high impact moves and you just kind of checked out of the match. The tough part is finding that sweet spot for the wrestlers, because that point is different for everybody. And there are people who probably made it through this entire match and thought it was five stars and just the greatest thing since sliced bread. And again, that's the trouble with wrestling, is it's so subjective. Some person's point of no return for a match is going to be different from somebody else's.
Well, I'll just say the sweet spot for me was Sami Callihan and just his portrayal as the ultimate heel. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, he was flipping off the fans, even though it was just kind of covered up, which I just find it absolutely fascinating that they would cover up a middle finger spot when 20 years ago, when Stone Cold Steve Austin was doing it, it wasn't quite that easy to cover up. But it just shows you how much different times we are. And if nothing else, I think Sami Callihan was definitely the star of the match. And I do want to segue real quick and want to talk a little bit about Madison Rain, who is basically the star overall in the Knockout division. And I want to talk about that segment that was kind of carrying over all the way to the end, you know, where she's in the studio and, you know, it's kind of like trapped, you know, it's like, and I'm a big fan of both the Twin Peaks and American Horror Story TV shows. And seeing that segment was just like kind of a little bit of a knock to that, and as well as a little bit of the broken Matt Hardy production that we saw in Impact a couple of years ago. It's kind of like a hodgepodge of all that together. And I just want to get your opinion on these type of segments. I know that there is sort of a story that they've been trying to tell with these sort of a mystery aspect to what, sort of like, I guess, like a red card or something. You know, I mean, as I said, I've been DVRing the shows, kind of going back and forth on it, but haven't really paid that much close attention to some of these segments. And I just want to get your opinion on where this is kind of leading up, because I thought that segment was kind of definitely in the vein of that, you know, Twin Peaks American Horror Story kind of genres, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I see a lot of similarities in what you're talking about there. And also, you brought up the Matt Hardy universe and the way that it was, or the broken universe, the way that it was shot and produced, especially reminded me of that. I think it works with certain characters. You know, they're not going to be able to do that with everybody. I think they can do it with Su Yung. They can do it with Rosemary. Right now, I'm not really sure there's anyone else in the show that you could do that type of segment with. I'm, again, okay with it as long as it's in moderation. I think if I were to watch an entire show like that, I would grow tired of it. But if they can do it with kind of one storyline at a time, there will, I'm sure, be several instances and long stretches where you wouldn't produce a segment like that at all on the show, because there really wouldn't be a need for it or a call for it. I'm fine with it. I think you just need to be you need to be mindful of the fact that it is very different. I mean, with the exception of Lucha Underground, it's very different than almost anything else on television as far as wrestling goes. So I don't think you want to go too far down or too far in that direction without knowing that there could be some risk involved, just because it's not you, it's the regular viewer, that's not that type of production is not what they're going to be used to be seeing. But overall, I mean, if it's done in moderation with one storyline at a time, and it's been done with Su Yung here recently, I don't have an issue with it. I think it's fine. Greg, what are your thoughts there on that segment and the Madison Rayne Su Yung segment? Also, any correlations that you've seen with either other shows or like Kenny brought up with the way the Broken Universe was produced?
I think the writer and producer of that segment, probably their day was made by the comparison to American Horror Story and Twin Peaks. those are very lofty comparisons. I liked it. I thought it was fine. I generally am more forgiving of those types of segments than I think some people are. There are some fans of wrestling who would take issue, who want their wrestling grounded 100% based in reality. And they would have a problem with that segment. They would pick it apart to the point of, you know, the camera at the very last shot was from Madison Rayne's perspective. Did the cameraman give her the camera to shoot? You know, that sort of, I don't want to say nitpicking because I think it's a legitimate question for a show that's otherwise shot completely 100% different from those segments. But to me, so much of wrestling is same old, where you're treading the same ground week after week, that I'm willing to give a lot more leeway to attempts at creativity and attempts at thinking outside the box. That's why I was a huge fan of the Broken Universe at a time when I don't think it was as accepted as it is now, as good TV or compelling or what have you, just because it was so different. So I thought it was good. And the trouble with things like this too, historically, is you don't have the quality writers to pull off something this deep and something this outside the box, but you also don't have the actors who can pull it off. You know, wrestlers for the most part are not trained actors. And when you give them something like this, that is outside of their comfort zone, outside of, you know, cutting a promo in the wrestling ring, it's very difficult for them to wrap their heads around it, and it's difficult for them to perform it in a way that fans can buy. And as soon as fans don't buy the performance, you know, they're out. They're checked out of the segment. And that's why one of the things that I complimented at the top of the show was Madison Rayne's acting during this segment, because I think that really helped make it tolerable for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree. She was really selling it. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned how some people wouldn't take that. And yet all I can remember was, you know, in the territory days, and particularly in championship wrestling from Florida, when Kevin Sullivan was there, you know, he would do segments not quite like that, but it's kind of in that similar vein. So those that like to say, oh, I don't like wrestling like that, they need to kind of take a step back and see that it's been done before. It's maybe not to that same extent, you know, in that sense. You know, I'm not talking about Dungeon of Doom. I'm talking more like the occult aspect from the 80s. But anyway, I just thought that that was really a great thing. That, you know, that's the one thing that I can say, that Impact does have an edge over WWE, and that is actually their production value. I mean, believe it or not, I feel like that when they do those type of segments, that Impact really do a good job of it. It just seemed like that they have a knack of trying to produce those segments that have that ESPN, UFC quality feel to it that you just don't really get as much from the WWE, which is really shocking considering how big WWE is.
Yeah, if, you know, considering the difference in budget, they do a really good job with what they have. I don't think there's any question about that. They get a lot out of whether, and some of them are, you know, they're not tricks, but they're good at, I think, of maximizing the resources they do have to make those video packages look really good, whether it's a segment like the Madison Rain thing at the end, like we've been talking about, or whether it's a video package with Moose and Austin Aries. They do a really good job of using the tools that are available to them to still make it feel like it's as big of a production as WWE, even though their budget is probably, you know, for certain things, I'm sure, you know, a fraction of what WWE might spend in a certain segment. So yeah, they're definitely very good, I think, at maximizing the resources they do have to make the show look as professional as they can. And as it really, I think, shows with a lot of those backstage segments and those video packages, like you said.
Yep, that is true on that. And anyway, that's really all I have to say on the show. I thought it was overall, like you said, it was a pretty good show. And as I said, I've been keeping up with it through DVR, but this was the first time that I have actually watched the show from start to finish. Hopefully that will happen more often, and maybe I'll get to call on occasion, hopefully, and I'll definitely try to call on Sunday. Looking forward to seeing the craziness that Extreme Rules will have, if anything, and maybe get that straightened out, Greg, and I hope you guys have a good rest of the show.
Thank you. Thanks for the call, Kenny.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, let's wrap it up with one more phone call. We are rapidly running out of time, though, Vinny, so we don't have too much time, but I do want to squeeze you in. Vinny's up next on the live cast. Vinny, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Good, good. Greg, great to have you on the show. Nice to hear you. Haven't heard you in a while.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here with Mike tonight.
Yeah, definitely. Nice little change of pace. Love Andrew. Don't get it twisted, but I love hearing that. I know you got to close up shop, and I've been so bad at calling you guys so late. My apologies there. I just wanted to bring up a quick comment that I wanted to, Mike, I wanted to kind of bring up to you last week, but just, again, I called late. But, you know, I think that Impact right now, I see things bubbling a little bit on the show side of things. And I don't know if it has to do with maybe this set of tapings or just the energy behind the tapings. This edge that they have content wise, I think is going to be something that we might look back on around this Slammiversary time and whatever they do in the fall. I think it's really going to be a something we can look back on and see. This is kind of I wouldn't say a turning point, but this is a point where things kind of start falling into play. And I'll tell you why I think this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. I've stopped watching WWE completely, and it's not that I don't like the performers in the company, but I feel that from a storyline perspective and also from the promo perspective, I can't get into it. I don't feel reeled in. And I've had my moments in Impact where I've really liked it when people didn't like it. And I've had points where I really didn't like it and people liked it. But I think right now with the edgy content, such as the LAX storyline, coming from New York, I was born and raised on the East Coast. That type of stuff kind of hits home because it's kind of like gang warfare. You know what I mean? And it kind of reels you in. But I think right now with this edgy content they're producing, I think it's going to dishearten fans like myself who watch WWE to maybe have a conversation with, quote unquote, the masses. I've given up that to try to find something a little bit more tasteful. I love ROH. I like what they do. I like New Japan. I love what they do. But Impact's going to kind of carve their own niche. And I really think that as we kind of head into the fall and maybe top of the year, I think we're going to look back at this and say, hey, this is kind of some edgy stuff when it comes down to the promos. Sammy Callahan doing the middle fingers and then him telling the kid to punch me in my face and he scares the kid. These things we don't see anymore. And as you know, history repeats itself. I really think Impact's trying to kind of hit that aura of ECW, the land of the miscast, the land of I don't give a you know what. But I want to get your quick thoughts on that before I fire off my second or my first question to you guys.
No, I think it's a good point, and it's one of the things, you know, Kenny brought up the fact that they blurred out Callahan giving, I think it was Pentagon, you know, the middle finger in the ring, and I'm not sure that they had to do that, you know, just because from Pop's perspective, I know I talked about that Big Brother show they air, they just run a live camera. If the Big Brother, if you're not familiar with it, it's a reality show, people in a house. But on Pop TV, I don't know if it's every night or what, but they have a camera just on in this house. And I had it on the other night because my wife watches the show, and she had it on. And I walked into the room, and they're literally, I'm not even joking, dropping the F word on this show. It is on cable television. So this is the same network where this is the same network where they had to blur out middle fingers. Like, yeah, probably not. To me, I think that was Pop's, that was Impact's way of trying to make Sami Callihan feel even more edgy. I'm like, yeah, you know what? They could have shown it. They could have. But it almost makes him feel like a bigger heel if they had to blur it out. So I'm not sure that they necessarily had to do that, but they may have done so to make it feel even more edgy. It made it feel like he's breaking a rule, even if he wasn't really breaking a rule, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, no, I think that's a good comparison. Greg, what do you think of in terms of them trying to push the envelope a little bit more? Because that is something that I think that Vinny's right on, especially over the last couple of months with the Eddie Edwards storyline, some of the terminology they've used. It definitely feels like they are trying to push the envelope more than they have in the past.
And the Eddie Edwards storyline is the big one. That one with Sami Callihan and now with Tommy Dreamer being involved. That was certainly as edgy as you can get probably on Pop TV, but the big storylines, and that got Eddie Edwards over big, and that got people talking about Impact. And the LAX thing is probably one of the best storylines they have going as well as the Eddie Edwards one. So really the best stuff that they're doing right now are the stuff that they are pushing the envelope on. And I don't know if that's going to be something that Impact management looks at and a light bulb goes off and says, hey, we're being really successful at this. Let's go all in on this. Or if it's just kind of happenstance and it's a byproduct of just what they're doing, and you know they may have that edgy stuff over here, but they're also going to have the Moose Austin Aries type of match here. It will be something to monitor going forward to see how edgy they get, especially since WWE is all but out of the business of doing things like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike, I'll tell you, I believe that I did an interview with one of the creative members of Impact in the past, and I did it on a old website, and I remember asking him the same question as far as the bleeps of cursing. And from what I got, I didn't really get a dead-on answer, but I think one of the big things is that since the show is edited in post-production one time, they obviously got to ship it overseas to, you know, their partners over there. And I don't think they do multiple edits for multiple networks. So I just think they go in there and just edit it to kind of make it friendly for everybody.
Yeah, but no, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I mean, I would assume, and I would assume too, I mean, you know, even if, let's just say Pop doesn't care, because obviously they don't with Big Brother. I've seen that too. I was flipping out when I saw it. But, you know, I think it probably gives the viewer a little bit more of an edgy saying, who's this? My little brother is 19, and he kind of grew up in this whole John Cena's last CM Punk era, and he was watching it with me tonight, and he says, can he do that? And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess he can. So I think it catches people's eyes like that, because a lot of this younger generation, they haven't seen that. I shouldn't say old timers like us, but people who watch wrestling a long time, we've seen that in the past. So, but I agree with you guys in that sense. Real quick, before you guys get off the air, I wanted to bring up something about Brian Cage that kind of
60 seconds.
This is how I look at it. I don't know if you guys might agree with me on this front, but I think with Impact having, of course, a really, really storied history of kind of start and push with the X Division, I think that the creative team at Impact now, with Brian Cage going to X Division, I think it's going to give the X Division more authenticity of it being, okay, hey, we have a guy like this, this big guy. He's very agile. He can do the flips. He can do that. But if you notice the last few matches with Matt Sydal, he's really kind of changing the aura of an X Division match. Yeah, you get your high spots and things like that. I really think what they're trying to do is maybe make Brian Cage the flagship of that division, to maybe make it as notable as maybe the Joe Reign a few years back.
10 seconds.
Kind of make a different twist on it to where it's a little bit more 2018-ish. And the reason I say that is because I know you and Andrew were very critical on the Kongo Kong match where it was a DQ on him. And I think if you're going to put him in the X division, he can't dominate everybody because it doesn't really help the X division guys. But if he can go toe-to-toe with a Desmond Xavier and show a little bit of a weakness, I think people will get behind it more. Not to say that they won't get behind the machine and him just mowing everybody down. But I think we've seen WWE try to do that. Of course, the Goldberg thing, it's kind of been history repeating itself. So I just have a different thought process on the on that. And I'll let you guys respond. I just want to ask a question before you guys get and I'll hang up and I'll listen to it later if needed. But one of the questions I do have, though, for you guys, do you think that with the current regime now, with what they're doing, and with Pop obviously not kind of being the right fit for them, do you think now with the way TV is and with streaming numbers, we don't have access to that? Do you think that the number of live viewership, do you think it really matters at this point? Because, you know, I see WWE getting these big-ass deals for the you know, the Fox and USA, and their number, I mean, Raw was, I think I read it was like the lowest rating of the series. Do you think the digital numbers with Hulu, maybe a Sling and all that, do you think that those are paid more attention to in the YouTube numbers than really the TV ratings? And do you think Impact can maybe survive with just Pop, but just kind of building it up? Because I think long term, if we think about it, you know, Pop only gets a certain amount of viewers there. But I think if and from Dave Meltzer said that they're not on a barter deal anymore. I don't know how true it is, but I guess Pop gave them more money this go around when Jeff was in power. So they're getting a little bit more money. But do you think, though, that that TV viewership matters in comparison to all these streaming numbers? Just want to get you guys' thoughts on that here before we jet.
I think they do, yeah, only because I think it's easier for them still to monetize TV viewers than streaming numbers right now. That could certainly be different a year from now or 2 years from now or almost definitely 5 years from now. But when you look at the amount of money that WWE is getting, and they're not going to get anywhere close to that type of money, but I just think it's going to be easier for them to it's going to be easier for them to open up a bigger revenue stream with television viewers still. It's a matter of whether or not they're able to actually make that work, because so far that's been a struggle since they've left Spike. Greg, do you think that – I mean, the future – I think the future is streaming. I cut my cable cord a year ago and stream all my television now. It's just I think a lot more people are going to begin to consume their TV. Greg, do you think that they're still – going to be able to monetize those television numbers more than streaming numbers? And obviously, I mean, I think the future down the road is going to be streaming for everybody. But I would think right now anyway, that the bigger concern for Impact is going to be to open up the biggest revenue streams they can. And I still think that is going to come from television.
Yeah, at least for the short term it is. And the reason WWE got the numbers it got was because live TV is gold right now, because advertisers want to advertise on shows that are live because people want to see them. They're not going to DVR them and watch them later. There's an advantage to watch them as it happens. So the advertisers are willing to pay more for that space, and advertisers are no longer scared off by WWE as they had been in the past. And the other thing to remember is WWE's rating may have been at a record low this week, but if you look at the top 10 cable ratings this week, WWE was still holding in three of the top 10, and I think they were second. One of their hours was second. So that indicates the numbers are down across the board and not just with WWE. So it's kind of misleading to say that, yeah, the numbers were record low this week, but everything was low, you know? So they were still in the top 10 with all 3 hours.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. No, I think what I was trying to at least convey a little bit is just I think that with wrestling, with WWE being down and possibly TV being down, that makes sense why it was so low. I really – and there's a lot of fans out there that I think that are really looking for something different. And sometimes we get stuck in our ways. Like I tell my wife all the time, she make fun of me. It's Monday night, I'm going to watch Raw, and I have it. And she's like, are you okay? Are you not going to watch it? And it's just like I'm good. I'll watch maybe 1 hour of NXT, Impact, and then maybe something else over the weekend. So I don't know. I just think in a grand scheme of things, I think that if WWE, obviously, is, no one's ever going to overtake WWE. But I think if ROH can kind of encapsulate what they're doing on the indie scene and kind of doing what they do mid-level, but if Impact can really kind of gauge that edgy stuff, I don't know. I think they got some really, really good momentum. Hey, what do you guys think about the Brian Cage thing that I had mentioned as far as, you know, maybe them just kind of rebuilding and maybe trying to define the X division with a different view on it? I know Don Callis had mentioned in an interview that I was listening to that, you know, he's a big fan of All Japan in the 90s and also ECW. And that whole monster thing is like, obviously he's great and he can pull out things in his arsenal there that people haven't seen and kind of slow build them. Do you think the X division could maybe be rebuilt with a different type of blueprint moving forward? Instead of it just kind of being flippities and, you know, just no selling and stuff like that.
I think
what
they can. Yeah, no, I think they can. I think the biggest thing, I mean, no one's ever really defined what the division is other than to say it's about no limits. I mean, that's been the one line they've used for the last 16 years is there's no limits. But that's the only thing they've ever done to really define the division. It's never really been defined as a weight class. I mean, it kind of has been because it's for the most part only ever been cruiserweight type wrestlers. But they've never come out and said it was a cruiserweight division. So if you can look at a guy like Brian Cage and say, hey, it's about no limits. He can do these athletic moves. It's about athleticism. Then you can do that with a guy like him. You're not gonna be able to do it with everybody, but you could do it with a guy like Brian Cage, and I think that I think it would work. And whether or not he'll redefine the division, I don't know. Like I said earlier, I think it's more this is an excuse for them to put a belt on Brian Cage before he ultimately wins the world title at some point, and there's no other belt for them to put on him, really. I guess, you know, they've gotten rid of all these other belts. I mean, they've got the world title, the X division title. Maybe they could make him a tag team champion. I don't know. But I mean, this to me just feels like it's more them wanting to put a championship on him before he ends up winning the world title. Greg, what do you think of Vinny's question there regarding the X division and Brian Cage? Do you think this is a move that could redefine the division a little bit, or do you think it's more something for Brian Cage to do on his journey to winning the world title at some point?
If there was going to be a guy that you were going to use to rebuild the X division and make it on equal footing as the heavyweight division, Brian Cage would be that guy. You know, we talked about the potential that he has, certainly a potential world champion. So if you wanted him to be the standard bearer of the new and improved X division, I'd say I'm all for it. But you would actually have to follow through and treat the X division as being on equal footing and not being a secondary citizen opening match on a pay-per-view type division, which is what historically the X division has been in Impact Wrestling. The other problem is, you know, if you really want to keep Brian Cage in the X division, you're sort of limiting yourself. Because he's going to have a wider array of opponents if he was in the heavyweight division than he will in the X division. And, you know, if you want this guy be the top star in the company, he's got to be the world champion. And if he crosses over from the X division to the world championship, that's going to be a sign to the fans that the X division is just a stepping stone and it's not truly on equal footing with the heavyweight division. And that's going to be the problem. If you eventually want him to cross over, it's going to be seen as a lower class. The X division is going to be lower class division than the heavyweight division. So, in theory, it's a good idea. In practice, it's a lot more difficult to pull off, I think.
Yeah. Greg, you're a smart guy, man. I love listening to you, man.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I just think that. You know, my vision of it is like, hey, you know, maybe this is kind of a new coming for it because obviously the booking's been a lot different lately. I think really, and Mike, I brought this up last week too, is that, you know, when Alberto got fired and they got him out of there, this last set of tapings that they did after Redemption in Orlando, I think they were just kind of on the fly with a lot of stuff. So it seems like these last 2 weeks have been pretty focused. We can kind of tell what they're doing. We kind of have an idea what they're going for. Product-wise, and it's pretty exciting. I mean, I've been burned by Impact a lot too, but I've always thought that if they could just get their you-know-what together and they could just get focused and have some type of vision, they got the tools. I mean, they got everything they need to get it done, and they obviously have an amazing roster right now. But, hey, I appreciate you guys taking the call, Mike. Greg, great to hear you, and hopefully you can, we'll hear you again. But I'll probably talk with you guys next week, and thanks again for taking the call.
Thanks, Vinny, as always. All right, we're gonna wrap up the live cast on that note. Greg, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, just thanks for having me this week. I'm glad I was able to fill in for Andrew, who will be rested and relaxed, as you said, when he returns next week.
Absolutely. No, thanks for taking time out on a Thursday to watch the show and then join me on this show. It's like as we approach, nearing midnight here, it's almost a four-hour ordeal to sit and watch Impact and then do the show right after. So thanks for carving out several hours here on your Thursday to join me.
Sure. I'm on summer vacation, so I could go deep into the night if we needed to.
Sounds good. All right. Well, that will do it for this week's edition of the Thursday live cast. Like Greg said earlier, you can listen to him on Wrestling Night in America coming up Sunday night as soon as Extreme Rules goes off the air right here at pwtorchlivecast.com. And you can get a lot more from the PW Torch staff if you go VIP. And Wade Keller is going to tell you more about VIP and what you'll get with your VIP membership in just a couple of seconds. But for Greg Parks, I am Mike McMahon. Thanks again for taking time on your Thursday to listen to the PW Torch livecast. We'll be back, or Andrew will be back with me next week on Thursday night as we talk the go-home show of Impact Wrestling as they head toward Slammiversary. And Greg will be back here on the livecast on Sunday as soon as Extreme Rules goes off the air on Wrestling Night in America. So thanks again to Greg for joining me. Thanks for all of your phone calls. We'll talk again next week right here on the PW Torch livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.